You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
May the 15th, 2020. This weekend, more businesses will begin to open, and come Monday, even more. Across the nation, as various states make a decision, we can move forward, maybe cautiously, maybe only select businesses, and maybe some of them still have to maintain curbside service instead of sit-down service like a restaurant, but we're going to go ahead and try to start opening. Johns Hopkins University has out some data that says in its last report, the number of new coronavirus cases reported each day is going down in more than half of our states. In all, 28 states see a downward trend, and that includes several that took steps to reopen relatively early: Colorado, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and of course, Georgia. When everybody said, look at that Republican governor, he's going to flaunt this in Trump's face, he's going to get people killed, Trump was even saying, I don't think Georgia should open just now, but the governor is on the ground, he makes the decision. And again, Georgia is one of the 28 states seeing a downward trend. Now, keep in mind, if you have an exposure today, you might not show it for 3 to 7 days or more. Or you might carry it for a while and then expose someone else weeks down the road. But, of course, I'd like to be optimistic and say we're not going to have any more deaths, infections, but we will. My concern is that the left will rally around again and say, see, this is all because we reopened the nation. You really want to keep the nation closed for months yet to come? You know, they're talking about now, we should keep it closed until we have a cure. A cure? We don't have a cure for any cancers, really, right now. We have treatments, and sometimes they help, but we've got a lot of diseases we never had a cure for. We've had it for numerous communicable diseases as well, until we got a vaccine that helped. But to keep it closed, not until we flatten the curve, but keep it closed until we have a cure? Worldwide infections, 4.5 million. Deaths, 304,000. In the U.S., infections, 1.4 million. Deaths at 86,000. I'll remind you again, that number could be wrong. It could be way overreported by hospitals who simply listed COVID-19 as a cause of death of a hospital patient, because then they get $13,000 for treating such a patient. And if they put them on a respirator or ventilator, then they get $39,000 on top of that. And then again, we might have some that have just been classified COVID-19 because they didn't bother to make an autopsy and they seem to come in with similar symptoms and just label it that. And of course, the U.S.-Mexico border, we continue to see that reducing the number coming across is certainly helping. And do you hear the left saying, you know, it's right that we secure the border so we don't have any of these diseases come in? No, you don't hear them talk about it. And we have had some legals come across from Mexico, and they are causing havoc in one area. I'll give details on that a little bit later. In the meantime, Canada wants to continue closing the border with us right now, except for essential traffic. And, of course, we have the unmasking of the Obama White House officials who wanted the Flynn case exposed. Those in the White House, administration, FBI, CIA, that were all looking to get the Flynn case made public so it would damage Donald Trump. Former CIA Director John Brennan is one of those we now have exposed as wanting to have the Flynn case unmasked. And he made a remark that is absolutely laughable regarding the names of those released. We'll be getting into that. Also, we'll conclude with a great story of Medal of Honor recipient, a story of courage. And actually, there's apparently evidence that we're doing really well in fighting off COVID-19. If you look at Joe Biden, has said, well, he got his facts a little confused, basically saying we've had 86,000 lose jobs and millions die. That's a little backwards. If we had millions die, I think we would know that. But he said we've only lost 85,000 jobs, but millions have died. All right, thank you, Uncle Joe. We got a lot to cover for you for the next 2 hours. Let your friends, even your enemies, know we're on the air. Lock and load, ready, on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
COVID-19 is a new health concern, but Wellington Environmental has 30 years experience to make your company and environment safe. Wellington Environmental can give you peace of mind, and the cost is very reasonable. These days, you can't take a chance that customers, employees, your family would be exposed to COVID-19. You have to be proactive. That starts by calling Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. You'll quickly see why customers have relied on Wellington Environmental for decades. COVID-19 can survive for hours on your furniture, your computers, your equipment, and every time someone touches that surface, they could be exposed. You don't want that liability. Call Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest, best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You gotta shrink the sphere of people who can unmask American citizens' names, but then you gotta treat a 10-year felony like what it is, which is a serious crime, disseminating classified information. So I ask the FBI again, how's your leak investigation going? I know how your Michael Flynn investigation went. I know the time and effort you spent to try to catch someone in a lie. How is your 10-year felony investigation going? It's been 4 years now.
That is Trey Gowdy, formerly with the House and serving on the House Oversight Committee. He was in the chairs. I got witnesses in front of them dealing with the so-called Russian collusion story and getting them to testify and putting them on record. And his point being that those who have wanted to unmask the Flynn case, White House Obama officials wanting to have it unmasked, and then there were several that had done so, and one of them, at least one of them, leaked it. They leaked it with the intent to expose Flynn and, of course, damage Donald Trump. They were going to do whatever they could to destroy Donald Trump. And once they heard an investigation was underway with a member of the Trump administration, but it had been taken during our normal intel, and you only get to unmask someone if you have special clearance and you have proper security clearance, and you can ask for someone to be exposed to you so you know who's involved. And the list of those who came forward that we know now from testimony behind closed doors, it's all been opened up now, and more will be coming. We know who was wanting to have Flynn exposed, and they wanted to do it for what purpose? Strictly political. And yet, they want to claim now that because their names are drug out and stuck in front of everyone because they were wanting to unmask Flynn, that they have been politicized and they've been victims of politics on the other side. So I got a remark from Brennan out in a moment that it just is absolutely laughable. We have Brennan, Clapper, Comey. There you got the three top tell in agencies, CIA, FBI. All of them stepping forward and wrapped up in this thing, wanting to unmask him. You got McDonough. McDonough was White House Chief of Staff. The White House Chief of Staff contacted the agents and say, I need to have knowledge of who you've been investigating on this Russian call. And he got it because he has clearance. But now, do you think the White House Chief of Staff did that solely on his own discretion, deciding, you know what, I'm going to go take a look at this? If you believe that, well, I got a lot of land I'll sell you in some dead cesspool. He did it on the directions of Obama. No doubt about it. Either Obama or someone in the Oval Office telling the Chief of Staff, go do this. Get us that name. And he did it the very day that Obama had that meeting in his Oval Office with Brennan, Clapper, Comey, and Sally Yates, acting Attorney General at the time. But who was going to investigate the leak? As you heard Trey Cowdy say, that is a 10-year felony. And the FBI supposedly was going to start taking a look at it to try to find out who did this. And again, the list is a who's who of the White House. You got Joe Biden, Vice President at the time, and as I said, FBI Director Comey, CIA Director John Brennan, Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, and as I mentioned, Obama's then Chief of Staff Dennis McDonough. Every one of them were among those asking the Flynn investigation be revealed to them. Former U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Samantha Power, sought to obtain Flynn's redacted identity using an unmasking request on at least seven occasions, seven different times. Seven times, and yet, under oath before the House Intel and Committee, she said, I have no recollection of ever making a request. Seven different times, and now I don't remember. Trey Gowdy pointing out again, you got to shrink the rank of those and the list of those who have access and have the authority to ask for an investigation to be unmasked if it involves a U.S. citizen. Because he said then you can limit and find out quicker who leaked it. In this case, the names I just read you, they all were provided the information. Did Comey leak it? Is that why the FBI has taken 4 years now to not even have results of any investigation, as Gowdy pointed out? Would it have been then CIA Director John Brennan, then Director of National Intel James Clapper, maybe somebody inside Obama's office? I mean, the list is extensive. But somebody did it, and if you get to that, if you reach that point, then you have someone to be charged with a felony. And I submit to you that Samantha Power, former U.S. Ambassador to the UN, when she asked for it on seven different occasions and had testified under oath before the House Intel Committee, she had no recollection whatsoever of ever requesting it, put that woman on the stand and go after her for, quote, perjury or lying to federal agents, whatever you want to make it at this point. in this case, actually testifying under oath to Congress, that's clear perjury. And nothing's being done yet. Well, we're gearing up to do it, apparently. We are supposedly gearing up. Senator Lindsey Graham questioning again, as Trey Gowdy has, how many of these guys were involved and what should be done, and the name of Michael Flynn should be given to them only for clear national security reasons. The South Carolina Republican saying, here's the concern. If you don't have a national security reason, you're basically spying on a political opponent, which is exactly what they were doing. And Devin Nunes, Republican of California, asked the question the other day. What the hell? What the hell, why Obama administration officials were doing to call for this unmasking to get that intel and information? They said, when you look at an intelligence product, that doesn't mean it's a fact. It's classified. So the fact that they would be taking that information, unmasking whoever that was, leaking it to the press, is a big problem. And clearly it is. We are going to have an inquiry, but to what extent? Senate Homeland Security Committee Chairman Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, has also signaled he wants to have a full fact-gathering investigation on this effort to unmask any communications involving Army Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. And he said, we're going to request Obama administration officials, including former Vice President Biden. Well, what about Obama? What about Obama? Trump has already said Obama should be brought in as well, and he should be questioned. There is pushback now from Senator Lindsey Graham at that point. Lindsey Graham says he's not in favor of calling a president, a former president even, to testify. Lindsey Graham in his Senate Judiciary Committee, they're going to try to fire up their inquiry in June and look at the FBI's handling of that investigation into the Trump campaign. But Lindsey Graham says, we will be calling all people who signed the warrant. We'll ask questions like, should there have ever been a Mueller case? We're going to look into unmasking. But, as I've said, no president's above the law. But we do have separations of power, and I think it would be a bad precedent to compel a former president to come before Congress. So he's not in favor of doing that. Do you think anyone that they do call would end up saying something that would fully indict Obama, at least from the witness stand? These guys have already been caught in so many lies. Samantha Powers, like I said, lying to Congress about, well, let me put it this way. She obviously has such a bad memory. She can't remember seven different times. What was a woman ever doing as our UN ambassador if her memory's that bad? And then you also have, as we discussed previously, that we've had various members in the security team, including John Brennan, claiming that they did nothing wrong. And yet now we see it. They were on all the mainstream media talking about how bad Trump was, and they have all this proof, but behind closed doors when they were under oath, they forgot all of that, ignored it. And John Brennan is really upset that his name's been drug into the white, bright light now as one of those in the Obama White House wanting to unmask Michael Flynn during the presidential transition period. And he says, the guy can say this and you're just supposed to believe him, because he's a former CIA director. And he says, the fact that we have so many, my name and others being put out for everybody to see that we were inquiring about the Flynn case, that's an abominable abuse of authority. Abuse of authority for what the CIA was doing under Brennan and FBI under Comey. Now he's concerned about an abominable abuse of authority. He said releasing these names is blatant political corruption at the highest levels of U.S. government. The highest levels of U.S. government. Trey Gowdy was asked in an interview with Maria Bartiromo. He was given that quote, said, Brennan says, this whole thing of our names being drug out for everybody to see, that is absolutely political corruption at the highest levels of U.S. government.
Is he talking about himself? I mean, is he talking about the guy who used a dossier in a court pleading that the National Enquirer would be embarrassed to print? Is he talking about the guy that accused President Trump of treason? I mean, go back and play what Brennan used to say with what the evidence is now. So, I mean, John Brennan is as responsible for what this country's been through for the last 3 years as anyone I can think of. So, Maria, I just don't give a damn what John Brennan says.
I don't either until we get him under oath. And then I do care. Kellyanne Conway, White House counselor, says all these Obama officials were caught red-handed and Americans deserve answers. I second that point. Coming up a little bit later in this hour, we'll be joined by Jack Smith discussing mail-in voting. Stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com.
And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull a mask of an old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Let's talk about our northern border with our northern neighbor, Canada. We do have illegal crossings coming from Canada, and we have Americans illegally crossing into Canada, but obviously not like we see along our southern border. But since coronavirus has hit, nearly 8 weeks ago, Canada said no more U.S. citizens unless it's essential, and we need to make sure they're not carrying COVID-19 when they come across. The U.S. agreed with that, said, that's right, we'll do the same at this side. And so that was the first border restriction between the U.S. and Canada, and it was at that time going to go through the end of May. May 21st, I think, is the exact date. We have a similar target date with Mexico. We've done the same thing with Mexico. Now we're looking at, according to White House sources, extending that again for the Mexico border as well. Canada's already making it clear they want to keep their border enforcement going until June 21. We will probably see ours extend at least into about the same period because it's on a 30-day cycle. But the plan is underway to do it. And again, we're keeping the idea of not just illegals coming in, but dealing with disease. And there's been kind of a frightening story that's happened in the process. Even though we've had these areas closed, these borders closed, even for legal immigration, we've allowed some passage. And word is coming out of Southern California, San Diego, and lower, the legal immigrants coming in from Mexico, coming across the border at Tijuana, are overwhelming hospitals at Chula Vista, California, as they show up and want treatment for COVID-19. Now, of course, the idea of the border is always security. It's not just terrorism, it's to stop diseases. Former ICE acting director Tom Homan says, we've had decades of this battle.
This COVID is nothing new. Even though it's a terrible disease, it's a new disease. It's not new that disease comes across that border every day. When I was ICE director, we had facilities that were cohorting and shut down over measles, which this country defeated decades ago. We had to shut down facilities because of measles and chickenpox. We've had TB cases that were unrecognizable that there was no known treatment for. We spent months trying to come up with some way to treat this person. Imagine that person was released in our community.
And see, that's something the left wants to ignore or doesn't care about. Now, they're all big about challenging states that open too early and making a lot of noise out of it. They have taken their eye off the border, and we've been doing even better down there now. The wall's going up faster, and when it's all over, they're going to realize, oh, we got it all done. But the idea of a border is to protect your nation from whatever harm. And we have had pockets of TB and measles show up as illegals got across the border, unchecked, unvetted, no physical, and show up in some communities across the nation. As Holman said, we've battled it for decades. So this is nothing new. We just need to reinforce. All right, one of the proposals in the latest Democrat plan, Nancy Pelosi, her stimulus package, deals with, we want to open up and provide money for mail-in balloting. Is she opening the door to fraud? Stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure you have some alarms to let you know if someone breaks into your home. But what happens if your home is invaded by creatures? Six legs, eight legs, maybe more. Rottler Pest Solutions can help keep those pests out of your house, and if they're already inside, get them out. In fact, you can get a free, no-obligation inspection and estimate to protect your home. You can get that at any time. Go online to Rottler.com. Rottler.com, schedule your free inspection today. Rottler is the largest family-owned pest control business in Missouri. 10 locations, more than 200 team members. Plus, Rottler has a money-back guarantee. If you're not happy for any reason, they will make it right or your money back. You know, I first called Rottler more than 40 years ago, so I know they will take good care of you. I continue to trust Rottler. Rottler Pest Solutions, Rottler.com, Rottler.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Well, Nancy Pelosi is trying to get the House to move forward on her $3 trillion stimulus package, phase four. She's having problems, even within her own party, because progressives say, not enough in there for us, not enough green deals, not enough of what we want. And, of course, there's still items in there that have nothing to do with actually stimulating the economy. In particular, almost $4 billion for setting up, dealing with elections going forward, including mail-in, remote voting, and so forth and so on. Most of us are the opinion. You open that door, it is a Pandora's box. We already had to question illegal voting, those who should not even have the right to vote to begin with, much less voting more than once, because you guys, Democrats, won't even allow us to ID the person coming forward. No picture ID. I don't know what they're going to do come October if they want to fly somewhere, because you will have to have that for flights. But this push, is this going to open up widespread fraud? And joining us now is Zach Smith, legal fellow on these expert issues from the Heritage Foundation. Zach, glad to have you on board, sir.
Thanks so much for having me on, Larry. I appreciate it.
So let's begin with I saw a survey come out. This is a Political Morning Consult poll last weekend. 3 in 5 voters nationwide either strongly or somewhat support a federal law allowing or mandating states provide mail-in ballots to all voters. Just 25% were against it. That seems to me that the tide is shifting for those of us who don't like it. Give us the issues and the problems and the fraud possibility.
Well, I think, you know, the desire to vote by mail is certainly understandable with the coronavirus pandemic that we're experiencing right now. But what we've seen over the past several years is that the concerns that people on the left and the right talk about in terms of the potential for voter fraud, these aren't just hypothetical concerns. And in fact, the Heritage Foundation has a database with over 1,000 documented instances where voter fraud has occurred. And one of the main issues with voting by mail or write-in voting, where you don't personally go to the polls, is that the likelihood of fraud increases because the traditional safeguards that you have at the polls, you know, the ability of the poll worker to check your ID, to check the rolls on the spot, those traditional protections don't exist with mail-in ballots.
President Trump, of course, has been railing against voting by mail. He said the problem with the mail-in ballots, it's subject to tremendous corruption. Corruption, cheating, we're not going to lose elections because of that. Now, we've seen Republican businessman Mike Garcia win a seat, turn a blue seat red for the first time in decades in California's 25th Congressional District, and it was the special election conducted almost entirely by mail because of coronavirus. So does that say we've made too big of a deal about fraud in the mail-in balloting? This was a win for Trump and the Republicans.
Sure, absolutely. But I don't think we've made too big of a deal about the potential for fraud. Like I said, there are over 1,000 documented instances where voter fraud has occurred that's in the Heritage Foundation's database. And I think some of the concerns that are particular to voting by mail that come up is it's easier to commit fraud. It's easier to intimidate voters. The protections of a secret ballot, those are easier to circumvent. And the fact is it's easier for people either intentionally or inadvertently to lose votes. And it's also easier for people to vote duplicatively, once by mail somewhere and once in person somewhere. And so I think it's important to focus that if voting by mail is going to be allowed, that certain procedures and precautions are put in place to help safeguard the electoral process.
Pennsylvania has a June 2nd presidential primary coming up, and a local Republican leader in Pennsylvania was reminding supporters in Pennsylvania, hey, you can vote by mail because of coronavirus right now. And he did not get any thanks and appreciation from the Trump camp, a lot of them calling up complaining, said, you're trying to open us up for fraud. I mean, this is a backlash against that entire concept.
Well, I think it's important, if voting by mail is going to take place, states need to, as I said, take certain precautions. The first thing is they need to ensure the integrity and accuracy of their voter rolls. As I mentioned, when somebody comes to the poll, it's easy for the poll worker to check someone's ID, be sure their information.
May I stop you there? May I stop you there?
Sure.
The ID does not include a picture ID necessarily now. So how do they really know? How do they know?
Well, it's easier for officials to at least do some type of spot check when someone personally comes to the poll.
I bring a utility slip I picked up off the street and say, this is my address, here's who I am. That's often enough for someone to get to vote.
Well, here's the issue with the mail-in ballots, Larry. And if you just send out mail-in ballots, the rolls, unfortunately, in many states are not as accurate enough today as they should be. And so if states send out mail-in ballots, there's no way to check that the address is still good. There's no way to check that the person registered to vote at that address still lives there. And so there's a greater risk that extra ballots are just going to be floating around. And it's very difficult to track what happens to those extra ballots. So one of the proposals that's been made is that if states want to permit and pursue mail-in voting, that instead of just automatically sending ballots to individuals, states should think about sending request forms to individuals and addresses. And then if somebody wants to vote by mail, they can complete the form, sign it, return it to the election officials, and only then will election officials actually send them a ballot to ensure that that individual actually lives at that address, and that's still a good address.
You know, supporting your statement that we might have a lot of ballots just out in the wrong hands and so forth, they're seeing that in Nevada, in Clark County, that's the most populous county of that state. They've got a June 9 primary election coming up, and they've had thousands of ballots being sent out, and they acknowledge thousands went to inactive voters, inactive, and maybe have moved and not even the same person living there as well. All of this, again, opens up the possibility of voter fraud and this ballot harvesting where they go down and say, you don't have to do anything. I'll just come pick it all up for you. You don't have to put it in the mail. I'll do all of that for you. Again, gives more opportunities if you have ballot harvesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the recommendations. You know, my colleague, Hans von Spakovsky, has written extensively on the issues related to mail-in voting. And in fact, on May 1st of this year, Heritage Foundation published a two-page fact sheet highlighting some of the foundation's recommendations to help protect the electoral system and highlighting some of the main problems with the electoral system. And like you mentioned, Larry, vote harvesting is a major issue and a great opportunity for folks who want to defraud the electoral system. And so that is certainly one of the recommendations, is that states should ban vote harvesting and not permit candidates, party activists, or political consultants, all of whom may have have a dog in the fight in the outcome of the election, to basically go around collecting absentee ballots from folks.
Since you brought up your colleague Hans von Spakovsky, I do have an article from him where he stated online voting is not the answer. Talking about online now, not mail-in. He said no method of casting ballots over the Internet would be safe, secure, trustworthy. Votes could be manipulated, changed, recorded, spied on. He says proponents supporting online voting argue, well, we do banking and shopping online. But he says, but look at how much risky that is when it comes to theft, cyber fraud, malicious hacking. That's for an item you're trying to buy or getting in your bank account, not your right to vote and your vote itself.
Well, and I think one of the important things to remember is that, you know, we often think of elections in terms of national elections for president, for senators, for governors, but mail-in ballots also include local electoral offices, state representative, mayor, city, county commissioners, and many of those races are decided by very thin vote margins where even a few erroneous votes could literally change the outcome of the election. And so because of that, I think it is important to have a very strict standard and do everything we can to ensure the integrity of the electoral process.
The other part of all of this, this is part of the Pelosi latest phase four stimulus package. What does this have to do with getting the nation back to work?
Well, unfortunately, we've seen in a lot of these stimulus packages a lot of extra bailouts proposed and plans funded that aren't necessarily related to the coronavirus pandemic. And, you know, that's been one of Mitch McConnell's biggest complaints about some of these proposals that have come out of the House. And so to your point, Larry, I think it is important that any election-related reforms be narrowly targeted and specifically addressed, at least at this point, to problems arising from the coronavirus.
All right. Zach, again, I appreciate you joining us and giving us some insight. And it's a subject you're going to be with us as we move forward. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thanks, Larry.
You bet. Zach Smith with Heritage Foundation. Yeah, there's a quote out in Nevada talking about all these ballots piling up and going to the wrong addresses, and somebody, a postal worker actually said, something stinks here. She would know. Hey, there's some strange stories coming out of New York City in the midst of this coronavirus story. Stick around for that.
Keep my Christmas lights on my front porch all year long. And I know
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Some of you might remember a 1958 TV program beginning in 58 and later also became a movie, Naked City, or The Naked City. Kind of a semi-documentary format showing crime and so forth. The TV series came from the motion picture in 48, The Naked City. So the motion picture came first, then came the TV series. And in each episode, the narrator would say, "There are 8 million stories in the Naked City. This has been one of them." Well, somewhat like that. 8 million stories in the Naked City. Last population check I see from 2018 shows there's still about 8.3 million. So they haven't changed that number dramatically since that time. And, of course, that's where we've seen an epicenter of the virus. So among the 8 million stories, here are some. New York Post is reporting women in New York fear a crime wave because of coronavirus. Folks running out of things, everything from toilet paper to biscuits, cookies, whatever. And they are now buying guns. According to the Post, more women in New York are now seeking guns, anticipating they're going to have to live under a siege at some point. That's interesting. New York is a handful of states where gun stores are closed. They are classified as non-essential via the governor's shutdown order. But they've still been going to get guns. And they're open in most states. Find that a little interesting. And, of course, a New Yorker to take ownership of a gun when they do have them has to apply for a license to have a weapon. That option is gone because the New York Police Department has closed down its licensing office. So if they are buying guns, they are buying them elsewhere and then carrying them unlawfully anyway. But for their view, that's more safe. It's safer for them. Who can argue? That's one of the 8 million stories in The Naked City. And then we also have another issue. This coronavirus obviously has shut down a lot of things that folks enjoy, going to the movies, so forth. In New York, a big deal, going to the theater. Well, the theater is closed, obviously. The shutdown on Broadway. And they're not sure right now when they're going to open it. They were hoping to open maybe by June, July. And now Broadway producers are offering refunds and exchanges for tickets purchased for shows through September 6th. So indicating that theater will not open on Broadway until that date. They all close March 12th. That knocked out all the shows, including 16 still scheduled to open. Producers citing health and city authorities all extended the shutdown to June 7, and now they're looking at maybe going into September. There are a lot of actors, stage managers, and others that are wrapped up in that. So if someone offers to sell you a Broadway ticket to maybe be used in July, and they got a little markup on it because it's a big, big item that folks want to see, you better check and make sure they're even going to be open. If you buy it, then I'll have to, I don't know if I could tell you, you would actually get your money refunded by the box office since it's a second-hand ticket. I don't know how they determine that. They might. But either way, you're going to be paying more and getting nothing anyway. And then, in the midst of the 8 million stories in New York City, comes this one. This is direct out of the New York Post. New York City, as of the publication of this date, which was May 12th, Andrew sent it to me and I hadn't had time to get to it until now. New York City has not recorded a single pedestrian death because most everyone's staying home. that date, March 12th, marked 58 days since a pedestrian was killed in the Big Apple, the longest stretch since 1983 when they started keeping track of that. Lack of traffic, not enough traffic, a lot of folks not even going out. Of course, they have some folks, because they know the streets are closed, kind of racing down the street a little bit faster and maybe getting caught, maybe not. But so far, no deaths pedestrian-wise. Another story from the Naked City. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to get into the actual news coverage of unmasking of Michael Flynn and the Obama White House involved in that. And here's where the news media shows if it's really legitimate or not. And also had Dr. Gerard Lomero joining us later on the latest election models going forward. And we're going to finish today with a true story of courage. A story of courage leading to a Medal of Honor valor. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.